Hello, welcome to another episode of Django Chat. This week, we're going to be talking about how to contribute to Django. I'm Will Vincent, and I'm joined, as always, by Carlton Gibson. Hey, Carlton.
Hello.
So let's talk about this, because this is something near and dear to your heart since you review all the commits to Django. And for me, when I'm out and about, I've actually gotten this question a lot of experienced developers who've made changes in their own projects, and they say, how do I contribute to Django? It seems like this black box. So let's unmask it for people. So what's the first step? Let's say I've been using Django at work. I've done some gnarly, small, specific bug fix, and I'd like to share it with other people. What do I do?
Let me talk about my first patch to Django, because that's the best, right? So Django 1.8 and the template engines all got totally refactored, and Django Crispy Forms stopped working because it would instantiate a template object without specifying the engine, the backend engine. And this has been code that's been working forever, since like 1.4 or something like that. And what Django wanted you to do in 1.8 was to specify your backend. And it's like, well, but there is only one. It was the default Django template backend, and can't we just use that? And well, yes, we could. But it needed somebody to come along and fix it, so I submitted a patch, got a couple of reviews. It was easier to make a fix in Django than it was to make a fix in Django Crispy Forms at this point. So anyway, and that got merged in, and that was released in, you know, one of the subsequent patch releases. So what do you do? That was my first contribute to Django core itself. I've been contributing to REST frameworks, Crispy Forms, Django Filter, and Compressor all over the place, but I hadn't actually contributed to Django. Curious, isn't it? Anyway, what do you do? The first thing you've got to do is find in this case, I found a ticket, okay? I had a bug. I searched for it on Google, and up came on the Django issue tracker, the track, code.djangoproject.com. It came up with someone had reported this issue, and I'm like, oh, I've got this issue, I need to fix this. So, okay, what do I do? Well, then you go and read the Verifying manual, and there's a how to contribute to Django. So type contributing to Django in the top hit will be from the docs, how to contribute, and have a read through that. And it says you've got to do various bits and bobs. The key bit is...
It seems intimidating the first couple times you read it. I speak from experience, yeah. Where I a couple years ago was going to try to do something, and you know, I had trouble getting it installed, and I was just like, oh, I guess this isn't for me.
Right, yeah. And
which is why we're doing this episode, because we want to talk through and have people not have that experience.
Right, and what we want, and this is something that as a community we've got to work on harder, is to lower the entry ramp.
Yeah.
So people want to contribute, and there's a lot of millions of Django users. We want to make it smoother for them, because there's obviously a barrier to entry, because we're not getting as many contributors as we want.
And maybe I wonder if having, because I think that, you know, so if you go onto GitHub, you can see the source code for Django, and then within that is where you can go find the version that you would, the latest version of Django, or if you wanted to go in and make a contribution, right? That there's the separate.
Oh, right. So yeah, so you clone the repo. So you always.
Right, yeah, you clone the master
you
repo.
You always make a pull request, a change request against master, the latest master. And then if it needs to be backported to a supported version, then we will do that when we merge it. So
we being you a Django
fellows. In principle, there are other people that can merge pull requests, but the reality is that the fellows do all the merging.
So don't let that be a barrier. Just use master.
So the first thing is clone the repo. This is in the contributing guide, right? So but clone the repository. So git clone GitHub Django, bam. And it will give you version of Django. Create a virtual environment, change into the test directory, and pip install the requirements for Python 3, and then run tests. There's a file in the test folder called run tests, so current directory runtests.py, and it should run the test suite. And I say should, you need to have the right libraries installed on your computer and all those things. So there may be glitches.
But this is also a good educational thing, because if this works for the Django core team and you're not using it in your Django project, you should at least be aware of these tools.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, for instance, you might not have the right development headers for the database installed, so it can't compile the dependency. You know, there are various things, but if you have troubles getting Django up and running, you might have problems with your Python development.
Right.
Anyway, so it's probably these are things that you need to install.
And I wonder, I almost wonder if it would be worth having a Docker version, just
there
so
is.
Someone...
Aha,
there is a Docker version.
Right.
I'm not afraid to be ignorant on the podcast.
Right. So brilliant. So if it doesn't work for any reason, well, there's a a Dockerbox virtual machine, which you could download. And there's also a Docker, there's a Django box, which is a virtual machine, and there's a Django Docker box, which is a Docker, Dockerized instance.
So you can just Docker on it. Because I'm all hopped up on a Docker because I'm using it in my new book, in part to solve these local development challenges. And, you know, I would say the Docker, it is a million lines of code. So it can get hairy, but it also often can just work for you and be amazing. And you don't have to worry about this stuff as much. And I think in this case, it's probably that situation where you download Docker, you pull in the Docker Django version, and you can just get going because it will just have everything self-encapsulated for you.
Yes, and it's very good as well because it handles, so we support SQLite, MySQL, Postgres, and Oracle. Well, who's got set up with Oracle? No one, but the Dockerbox will do that for you.
Right? So I'm glad you broke the ice on saying something mean about Oracle on here.
Oh, well, you know, it's early in the week, so why not?
Okay,
The first thing to do is get it installed and get the test suite running. And whether you do that locally by creating a virtual environment, installing the dependencies, or whether you use Docker or the virtual machine, doesn't really matter. But can you run the tests? Yes, okay, I can run the tests. If you can't, then Django users or Django developers, or there's another mailing list called Django Core Mentorship, which you can go on and say, and be specific, say, I'm trying to get set up to run the test suite. The problem I've had is exactly this. Can anybody advise? And there are lots of people who, if you give a nice specific question like that, will be able to say, oh, you know, you need to apt-get install build essential, or, you know, whatever the missing piece is.
Always be specific with your questions. It really helps everyone.
Yeah. If you don't give an actual error message or something, you've got no chance of getting serious help. So can you run the test suite? Okay, fine. You found a ticket. Now that could be hard as well, because there are like 1,300 accepted open tickets on Django. It's a mature project. It's got a lot of open tickets. So if you're just like, oh, I'm looking for a project, and you start browsing, you could be there a long time before you find something that you think is suitable. So two things I'd say there. One is, have you got an actual issue that you want to solve? If you have, that would be the first place to...
That'll be easier way to get into it.
Yeah, focus on the problem that you've got to solve, and that's the best way. The second is, we'll filter it by component, because if you know, there might be 1,300 tickets, but there's only a couple on the syndication framework, or there's only 10 on the email, or there's 100 on the admin, or, you know, if you break it down by component, it's much more approachable than...
Now, what would you say in terms of, you know, what about, you know, looking at the most recent ones or looking at the oldest ones? Does the time that a ticket's been open matter? How should someone evaluate that?
Okay, but if there's a ticket that's been open for 13 years.
And it's still open. It's probably got some comments on it.
It's probably hard as nails. Right?
So it's an admin thing.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, it's probably not trivial, because it would have been fixed.
Right.
It's been looked at before, right?
Yeah, so if you're looking for low-hanging fruit, look for more recent ones.
More recent ones. There is an easy pickings flag, which doesn't have a lot of tickets on it, and they're usually assigned. If there's an easy pickings ticket that's been assigned, but it was assigned 6 months ago or a year ago, well, just comment. Say, are you still working on this? Can I take it over? Because sometimes people assign themselves a ticket and then don't work on it.
And that's a great one to look at to learn, too, because a common issue is someone will solve a problem but not have complete tests to back it up, which is probably like the number one feedback someone like you as a Django fellow will say, which is you need to have tests, comprehensive tests to back this up.
Okay, so here's a good one. So look on tickets which have got patch needs improvement or needs documentation.
Documentation is probably the number one way to start.
Right. Well, if you've got strong written English, then there are a lot of documentation tickets, which, you know, the difficulty is they take time, and a lot of contributors, English isn't their first language. And so it's difficult for them to take on documentation tickets. But if you've got strong written English, whether it's your first language or not, and you can write clearly, it's a really good way to get to understand more about the framework. Because you have to get into the issue, you have to understand the issue, and then you have to write about it clearly.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I was, you know, as a native English speaker, I would say sometimes people whose first language is not English are far better writers, because they have to be thoughtful about it.
Yeah,
But it is a little bit unfair.
That is not that English is your first language or that your native language, but you do need to have quite strong English and you need to be able to write.
Yeah, the docs are well, existing docs are very well written. So,
but there is a massive opportunity for people with strong written English to contribute to Django and make a big difference and to close a lot of issues. If there are issues that, if there are pull requests which are open but need documentation, to come in and help on those, or need improvement, come in and help on those, take those issues over. You know, most of the work might have been done. Maybe it just needs a test.
Because it, you know, it's a lot to do a change. You have to do the code, you have to write the test, and you have to document it. Document it, and sometimes people get tired.
And as well, like there will be feedback. So here's the thing. So let's say you've installed Django, you've got the virtual environment set up, you've run the test suites, you found a ticket, you've made a patch, you've opened a pull request. Right at that point, you're going to get reviews, and there's a patch review checklist, and there's coding styles. But that review will be quite precise. It will be very. It will be like, please make this small change. Please make that small change, and then you'll make those changes. And then there'll be more review. And it's not. It's not like a criticism of you personally. It doesn't matter who you are. You get exactly the same review and the same comments made. It's that the quality of Django is very high, and the way that we keep it high is by making sure that the changes that go in are just right.
And it's a gift to have precise feedback from a knowledgeable person too. I think, you know, if you're not used to, a lot of people maybe aren't used to feedback like that. And if you aren't used to it, it can feel a little jarring, but it is truly a gift for someone to be that precise with you. You know, you're dealing with the top Django people here too, who are generally reviewing this. So, I mean, you're just the educational component is massive. It's not Joe Schmo who's
to treat it as a learning opportunity, and that no one's trying to criticize anybody,
right? I guess
all they're trying to do is make sure that the patch is
right. I guess that's my point. If someone didn't care, they wouldn't engage with you. The fact that someone engages with you, especially when we're all working towards the same goal, is a gift.
Yeah, and what do I think? So there's two bits that I think that we struggle with contributors. One is the on-ramp that we briefly mentioned, is that people start and it's very hard to get going. The other is, I think people do get disheartened by the review process and how it can feel slow and patches can get stuck. And what?
Yeah, how do you break through that, right? Because that is a common thing. You basically are all volunteers, and sometimes there needs to be new blood, or there needs to be something to push an issue forward. And maybe, you know, it also can be as simple as if you're the one who's done the initial code and then you just get swamped and you can't do the documentation. If someone else comes in and does the documentation, to the extent that there's just more people involved, it makes it better for everyone, because you know, it's a lot of work to do this. And it feels great to have someone new or someone from outside come in and focus on what you're focusing on and help out and do all these last little things. I haven't pushed to core Django. I can imagine it's got to feel great to have your work in actual Django.
It's super. This is your code now. You own it. It's yours. It's your creation.
And you can, if you want to be selfish about it, it's a pretty nice thing to talk about in interviews. If you're going to interview for a Django job and you say, I've contributed to core Django and I've learned all these things by doing core Django quality work. I mean, even if it's just a single request, you know, if I'm a hiring manager and someone tells me that, dang, that puts you top 1% for sure.
Yeah, already, because most people haven't contributed. So one of the big things I talk about, and I've done a lot of open source over the years, and starting with REST Framework and it growing into other packages in the Django ecosystem, and then ended up, the Django fellow now. It's amazing. But from the second I started contributing to open source, all of a sudden, hiring requests or for like code samples and things like this, they just disappeared. Because, I help maintain Django REST Framework. Oh, yeah, we use that. Okay. And it totally changed the dynamic for me.
As it should. But, we were just discussing, right before recording, in my case, I'm an educator. I don't get quite that benefit of the doubt, even though I've done all these books, which is fair enough. But if you have actually contributed and gone through the steps to go through core Django or Django REST Framework, there's no higher bar than that in terms of, do you actually know what you're doing and can you write quality code?
Yeah. I mean, although, they're still in an interview, you might mess up. I'd, somebody asked me, custom user model. And I'm like, and what I should have done was just cracked open the docs and gone and looked it up, because that's what I do in real life. But I was in an unpressured situation and totally said the wrong things and didn't get the gig. And it doesn't matter.
No, it happens to everyone. Well, yeah, I got I got rejected for a job writing code for Django REST framework at the same time I was finishing my book on it.
The best-selling author of the...
Yeah, best-selling author, because the only author at the time. But yeah, so this is a great way to... It's a great way to maybe speed up those interviews a little bit.
No, but look, so the take home here, we're slightly digressing and hiring disasters from yeah. the take home is that if you contribute to open source, it does actually help your job. It's a massive learning opportunity because you get to see good code and that's not tied into something you're trying to create. You get feedback from other people. You get to learn to understand a code base which is foreign to you. The danger is that you get sucked in and spend too much time of it. And you've got to be careful. You've got to limit the time that you give to open source.
Is that the meat grinder you've referred to?
Well, it's not. I hadn't heard this phrase actually, but like the old school contributors to Django, they used to describe it as the meat grinder because it eats contributors, right? And so, well, we need some fresh meat for the meat grinder because. Triaging tickets is hard, and this was why the fellowship program exists, is because ultimately a project of Django's side, you can't expect it to be run on volunteer effort. It's just too much. So the triage thing is hard. It's really hard. You spend, you know, you get a ticket and you look into it and you try and write a nice comment and people are like cross with you because you didn't agree with their analysis. And it's like, no, I'm just trying to do the right thing here. I'm just trying to understand it. And then there's another ticket and then there's another ticket and it's endless. It's truly endless. And, you know, you take the weekend off and you come back Monday and, there's 15 new tickets. Oh, it's like, oh, my word. And you can't do that on a volunteer basis. So the fellowship program is we handle the triage, we handle the code reviews, we handle the releases, and then hopefully volunteers, that's you people, you can come and do the fun stuff like writing some code to fix Django.
Yeah, and I was going to mention for teams and companies, it's also if you can say, and you know, people on company time or the company is a contributor to core Django, that is also a massive help for your reputation, for hiring people. There are these selfish reasons for contributing to Django. In addition to, it helps improve the thing that you are using to run your business day to day.
Yeah, and it helps you get like it makes your employees better coders.
Yeah.
Right, and they will experiment. They will do learning. They will do all these things, and it's either going to be on your code base,
yes,
or on an open source code base where you get free code review from community experts. Like it's just a map to allocate, you know, the Google 20% time. You don't have to allocate 20%, but something like approaching that to work on the dependencies of your own project. That's a time well spent.
Yeah. And I think I'm glad we're going to list the resources here where if you do get stuck trying to contribute and you have a specific question, you can go and ask for help and be helped because, again, there's those two stages of just getting everything up and running, which sometimes puts people off. And then there's once you've contributed... I worked on a ticket, just the process. Again, think of it as free learning if you can.
No, but it kind of is. I mean, you know.
And it is. I mean, I look at, you know, that, I think this is the progression too of when you're learning Django. I mean, at least for me, I would say I'm a bit behind you, Carlton, on the Django expert level. But, you know, these days I just go look at the source code on stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be, I would go online, I'd look at tutorials, I'd look at the docs. You know, at this point, I basically quickly look at the docs and then I usually jump into the source code on most things. But it's taken a long time for me to get there, and working on core Django tickets is just going to ramp that up. And once you, it just is things opening left and right. Once you sort of see how things fit together, it becomes a beautiful thing. You're like, oh man, I really start to finally, it's like seeing the Matrix. You're like, oh, this is how this ties in with this, you know, because you just accept everything when you're starting out and, you know, we just sort of muddle through, but there's a real beauty in seeing how a web framework works. And then you can see, oh, these are the choices Django made and, you know, have these, you know, philosophical conversations about, well, if we were going to start from scratch, how would we change things? Like, those are amazing conversations to have. We'll probably have these in the podcast, but you get that by doing the work and digging in and understanding the source code. Because it's also in Python. It's very readable. It's not, you know, mysterious if you take the time to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you get right into the ORM. There's a lot to take in and
there.
Exactly, but slowly but surely, okay, you just dig into a single lookup. Okay, I see how this lookup works. Okay, I see how this expression works. And okay, the bits of the ORM just slowly start to come together. And yeah, it's...
Yeah, I mean, views are a great one, right? Like if you're curious, how does a generic class-based view work, like list view?
Look at the source.
You know, you can read the documentation. You can look at classy class-based views. And then if you look at the source, it will reference, it'll show you where it all comes from.
Yeah, and to open up, say, Django.core.handlers, which are the base whiskey handlers that handle the requests, and to look at how the get response function works, i.e. it takes in a request, and this is the core of it, and it builds the middleware, and it passes it through the middleware onion into the view and then back out through. It's like, oh, that's how it works. And then all of a sudden, middleware aren't as mysterious as perhaps you thought they were.
Yeah, or even just the idea of the context object that's passed into templates. That's something that when you're learning, it's just like, oh, there's something called objects. Oh, I can rename it. But like, what is it? You know, you don't necessarily get it because you're just so overwhelmed with everything else. But I guess we're saying there is a real beauty in seeing how the pieces fit together.
It gives you the opportunity then to when you're writing Django, when you're writing your application, once you sort of know how the form layer really works, you're like, oh, and this is why we create the form this way. And this is why we update the fields in init and not, you know, and this is why we set the query set here. And this is why, you know, those kind of things.
It does lead to an appreciation, I think, in general, of the choices that are made. And you understand the choices, too, even if you don't fully agree with them, again, when you get to this level.
Yeah, and there's never going to be the perfect web framework, right?
Yeah.
So you can be like, oh, Django's done it all wrong, and I'm going to rewrite the web framework from scratch. But in the end, you're going to end up making compromises, which will mean...
Right, and that is the thing, is that it is all trade-offs. And but I think you have to have a certain level to discuss the trade-offs in it. Interesting way versus, you know, I see engineers often talk like that to beginners when beginners say, I just want to build a site. And don't do that to them. To help them build something, and then you can talk about it. Because again, this is a big point of this podcast, is that there's a lot of things in Django that are maybe this, maybe that, and we want to talk about it as professional developers would and give that context, because there aren't that many things that there's one right answer, though there can be good answers and bad answers. So that's what we try to talk about.
Yeah. But what would we say here? We say, digging into the source gives you that insight.
Digging into the source is worth it. Contributing to Django is absolutely worth it. And there are resources to help you get started. And what else? You're doing your talk at DjangoCon Europe, which probably won't be up for a little bit, is on this topic.
Yeah, right? Exactly. On how to contribute and how to make that work for you. So there's contributing to Django, but then there's making sure that you don't get burned out by contributing too much. And there's, you know, how even if you've only got a limited amount of time, how do you make sure that you can still present your effort in a way that makes it transparent to prospective employers, the value of what you've done? Because you think, oh, I've only spent half an hour and a week for 6 weeks. And that's actually quite a lot. And if you just keep a log of that, and if you just present it in the right way, that shows a lot to an employer that gives you an advantage. Because one of the big issues that we have is that not just that we don't have enough contributors, but the contributors are all from that same stereotypical demographic of white male. You know, it's not entirely white, it's not entirely male, but it's largely white and largely male. And the Django community as a whole is much more diverse than that. And the danger with open source is that it just reinforces the same privileges. It's only the people who can afford to give the time to it that do give the time to it. Well, yes, if you're going to give hours and hours and hours to open source, you need to be quite privileged to be able to do that. But you can give a small amount of time, and if you track that, that can help you build a career around it, or can help push forward your career, which gives you more time. So when I started contributing to open source, I'm a father of four young kids. I was consulting, you know, doing freelance and agency work with Django and in iOS. But I was contributing in my spare time, but I didn't have lots and lots and lots of spare time. I still don't have lots and lots of spare time. You know, I maintain on my own time Django filter channels, crispy forms. I give these what I can, but it's not a lot. But it adds up over time. You know, do it month in, month out, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, wow, actually, you've done a lot. And the key for me is not to think you have to somehow find 10 hours a week. You don't have to find 10 hours a week. You know, if you can find some time on a regular basis, however small that is, that adds up to something really substantial.
I agree. And it's all out there. You can point to it. The work is visible in the community.
Yeah.
So there's no questions of ownership. Well, you know, sometimes if you're at a company, you can't show the work that you've done, but you can show work you've done on Core Django.
So I found myself writing applications for, you know, big company, big brands, but it was all under NDA.
Yeah.
And so when I go for other work, it was really hard to present, you know, I could, okay, you get a reference, but well, it's a non-specific reference. It's not like, hey, I did this.
Right. Well, you're making me rethink, you know, I think we'll do an episode on hiring in Django and what can you do. I've always told people, you know, build a bunch of projects and open source your work, but you know, that's a lot of work and maybe that's more than you're able to do. You know, if you can just go in and do documentation on Core Django, in some ways, that's probably better actually than just building a blog or whatever project. Hard to say. It definitely helps. And I think it's an avenue that, yeah, we want to highlight.
What are hiring managers looking for? They're looking for good teamwork, good communication skills, you know, all these things, which if you can work on an open source project with other people, it demonstrates all of those. Whereas if you could sit home and build, you know, some demo app, well, okay, that's impressive too, but it doesn't show teamworking skills. It doesn't show communication skills. It doesn't show all these other things, which hiring managers are coming to realize are just as important, if not more important.
Right. And often the open source code is almost always going to be better than non-open source code.
No, yeah, it's this cathedral versus the bazaar thing.
Yeah. So, great. All right. Well, I think we've covered the main points. And hopefully we've, again, look in the show notes, we've illuminated a little bit of the process of contributing to Django, demystified a little bit, and tried to make points for why it's well worth your time. It's not just a yeoman's work.
Yeah, it's a really good thing to get into, and you'll learn a lot.
Yeah. Great. All right. Well, I will see you next week. As always, you can view this episode and others on djangochat.com, chat Django on Twitter, and see you next time, Carlton.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care.